flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
The Super Bowl is set. Chiefs and Eagles once again, the rematch from a couple years back. And let's talk some football now as we head out to the Window Nation fan guest hotline. Evan Washburn was on the sidelines for Chiefs and Bills. He's also heavily involved with Ravens Productions. He joins us now. And Evan, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So I'll start here. What's it going to take for a team to get over the hump against the Chiefs?
Hey, good to be with you guys. I think it starts with trying to avoid playing an Arrowhead. That'd be a nice first step. Obviously, Baltimore pulled that off last year. And I think the way you start the game is critical. Now, Buffalo came back and grabbed the lead, and I thought it was really playing their best ball in the third quarter. They make that stop out of halftime, and then they run the ball down the field, I think 80 yards, James Cook touchdown. And it's like, oh, okay, the Bills are ready to go in this one. And look, they lost by 3 points, so they did about as much as you can do, which they've done before. You got to avoid chasing points, which they ended up having to do based off of some failed two-point conversions. And outside of that, I think the Buffalo did about everything you could do, but that's what makes Kansas City so good.
Evan, a lot's been talked about the controversy in terms of a couple of officiating calls, the Josh Allen sneak on fourth down, the Xavier Worthy catch on a shoulder that looks like it hit the ground. What did you see on both those plays?
Probably not as much as anyone at home did. I'm on
well,
the sideline.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, but looking back yeah, on those.
No, sure. Look, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't spent too much time since that game kind of diving in. The officiating stuff to me is kind of, it's not as interesting. I understand as a fan it would drive you crazy if you feel like you're being jobbed by the officials or they missed a call that affects your ability to win a game, but until they have technology in footballs, I guess, is the one thing I heard Monday. I was on a show. They were talking about that for the down and distance. Mm-hmm. Okay, that works for me. Whatever can make it as fair and equitable as possible. But at the end of the day, just like one drop isn't the reason you lost the game, one first down, that I don't think determines result.
How do the Baltimore Ravens specifically get over this hump? Or are we just going to look back at this and say, nobody really got over this hump? You know what I mean? Like it just...
Hump being Kansas City?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat yourself. And, I mean, Baltimore didn't even get a chance to get to Kansas City, obviously losing to Buffalo a couple weeks ago. When you get in these... I mean, you guys have all covered this league. Jason, you longer than I have. I mean, you get in these playoff games, it does come down to ball control, efficiency, ball security, and then making the play in the moment. And then hopefully you're in the position to make that play. And I would say Baltimore on a number of occasions over the course of the last couple of years have done portions of that formula and then have come up short in other areas. I don't think it's necessarily – I mean, there's cases where you can look at it and go, oh, personnel, we didn't have enough guys. I mean, I would think Buffalo, honestly, would have the biggest argument right now to say – we got into this game with this roster. I was in that locker room. I'm talking to Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean after the game. They were not at all satisfied, but I look at that team as they overachieved by leaps and bounds from what I thought. So it really does come down to that.
Talking with Evan Washburn, Inside Access here on The Fan. Let me ask that, I guess, a similar question, but ask it differently. How close do you think the Ravens are?
Oh, they're extremely close. I think they've done everything they can do from – a roster-building standpoint, a performance standpoint at the most critical positions, i.e. quarterback and what Lamar has done. But you have to be the best version of yourself in the biggest games, and they just have not done that. I don't know what creates that. I don't know if that's a above-the-shoulders thing, if it's – it is – that's what I think makes this maddening but also extremely entertaining. You have no idea what's going to happen going into a game. The more you watch this league, the more you cover it, the more you get into the nitty-gritty, the granular things, all the analytics, you still have no idea what's going to happen, because I do think so much of it is the mental side of it and the fact that you need, in football standpoint, you need 11 guys doing – you got so many people need to be at their best version of themselves the most critical moments, and that's what I think, for whatever reason, has stood in Baltimore's way.
Some good news for the Ravens heading into next year. All signs point to Todd Monken coming back for his third year as offensive coordinator here. Were you surprised that Monken didn't end up landing one of those head coaching gigs?
No, I think he's deserving of the interviews, and what you do in the interviews, I think, is really what should be the separator. I don't know if it always is, but it's clear that two things. One that strike me with the coaching search, I do think you – I mean, he may have lent voice to this, but you do, I think, suffer from the better your team is, the less it seems to diminish your odds, unless you're like the one everybody wants. Like if Ben Johnson had been going deep into the playoffs, I still think he would have gotten the job that he wanted. But you're not able to be as engaged in the interview process because you got a bigger job in front of you. So I think that kind of stands in your way. And then I do think there's something to the new factor where – just like Steve Spagnuolo, who has higher credentials than Todd Monken from an NFL coaching standpoint, having been a head coach, there's no reason in some regard he shouldn't be given more of an opportunity. But I think sometimes you kind of pass through some invisible barrier of, oh, you know, maybe he's not what's going to ignite our organization or fan base in a lot of ways.
We have discussed on this show a little bit, and I'm sure we will throughout a long offseason, especially if Kansas City does win another football game, the likability or dislikability of this Chiefs team. And maybe I know too much how the sausage is made or whatever, but like I don't get a sense that within our industry people have nearly as much difficulty, let's say, working with the Chiefs and their communication staff and Andy Reid and his players as O say they would have, you know, for much of the Patriots' reign. Yeah. Like, I feel like Patrick Mahomes still comes off as a very humble sort of servant leader. I don't think the all shuck stuff is necessarily just for show. Like, I have a hard time getting, like, you know, like being an anti-Mahomes guy. Yeah. From your standpoint, what is it like for what you do working with that organization?
Well, you're spot on. Patrick Mahomes is awesome. The best part outside of the fan of the game and watching the game of Mahomes and Allen is having covered them since they were rookies and outside of their bank accounts massively changing. Yeah. And yes, there is some celebrity factor they have to manage, and you sense that at times there's can be an exhaustion, but they are the same that they've been in production meetings and interactions away from the field. And there's a down-to-earth nature to both, a humility to both. I think what you're getting to is kind of, are they the same as the Patriots in terms of fatigue and that evil empire that, yes, I think New England embraced? And
yes.
I don't think Kansas City has that or is interested in that being their identity or their perception from the outside. And Patrick said something interesting in our meeting when we asked about sort of the fatigue factor and being, you know, rooted against, just because I think people want new more so than they don't like Kansas City. And he brought up New England. He said, I have a larger, greater respect for what the Patriots did and specific to Tom Brady because of that. Because Mahomes, he's a likable guy. I think he likes to be liked.
Yeah.
He is liked by a lot of people. But the better you are and the more consistently you do what he's doing, you're going to alienate 31 other teams, and that's a lot of fan bases.
Evan Washburn, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. Great season. Enjoy your off season.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let's get some hoops going. We'll talk Maryland.
Oh, that's right. You'll be right on the college basketball trail.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I watched that Maryland game against Indiana before I head over to the stadium, and it was cool. It was fun to see, you know, those guys get a. I mean, I know Indiana's not top 10 or anything, but it was a good win on the road, and I liked it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk
soon. Thank you.
Appreciate you. See
you. Coming up next, let's stick with the Ravens. And we were discussing this a little bit earlier, but who were some interesting unrestricted free agent guys that led, like, some matches for the Ravens? Who are some guys the Ravens should be looking at? We're going to tell you next.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're on the fan.
Well, we'll look at that. I mean, I think we definitely saw a different type of performance from Kyle this year. But, I mean, if you look at overall how our defense blossomed with him back there, I think it was worthwhile. Did he make as many splash plays? Probably not. But I'd take the improvement in the defense rather than Kyle making splash plays and us not being very good on defense. So, you know, if we can add another safety, you know, obviously it would be really good for us. Gives us that, you know, multiplicity on defense and the ability to do a lot of different things. Kyle becomes that sort of jackknife again.
So that was Eric DaCosta at the season-ending press conference last week. And a question I asked him was about Kyle Hamilton, who obviously helped settle things down on the back end, but was not the playmaker he was a year ago. Was a second-team All-Pro after being first-team a year ago. But it seems pretty clear they want him back in that role. So with that in mind, we've perused the list of free agents. And one name that we liked a year ago, but they didn't want to pay him, was Justin Simmons,
yeah.
Jason.
I think, look, a year ago they were looking for a cheap Geno Stone replacement because between Marcus and Adarius and Kyle Hamilton, they felt like they could be okay, so they wanted that that box safety. Maybe he becomes the third safety. Maybe we've got nickel guys like Millett who maybe even keep him off the field, but that's what they were kind of going for because they thought Marcus would have a bounce-back season. Now they need to replace Marcus, and they need to get Kyle Hamilton able to be flexible to do anything they need him to do, not just have to be a full-time free safety. And Simmons would check that box. And I think at this stage of his career, he's more in line with the kind of money they want to spend. And he is still a quality football player, and he's still fairly rangy, and he obviously has tremendous instincts, and he's a student of the game. He's accomplished a lot in this league. He could be sort of that veteran dean of the secondary, which Marlon has kind of become that guy. I think it would make a lot of sense.
I think Justin Simmons makes a ton of sense for everything that you're saying. It's someone that doesn't deal with a ton of injuries. He does not miss many games over the course of his career. He averages 3 interceptions a season. He's only a couple seasons removed from a 6 interception year. 32 years old. So getting that veteran presence, like you were saying, Jason, because it is a very young secondary, I think it makes a lot of sense. And even last year, he sat on the open market till late into the offseason, ended up signing that 1-year, $7.5 million deal with the Falcons. Yeah. And he did visit Baltimore, yep. So they've already gotten to talk with him and meet with him. He's one of those guys that they should target.
So if not Justin Simmons, is there anything on the safety market that wets your whistle at all? I mentioned Jeremy Chinn.
I think that'd be a different way to skin the cat, but yeah. I don't think of him and Justin Simmons really in the same way. I think of Jeremy Chinn, when he was on the free agent market a year ago, was positioning himself more as a Swiss Army knife like Kyle Hamilton, not a guy that you'd want, you know, exclusively in coverage a ton. I've always liked his skill set. He was a freakish athlete coming out of college. I know they liked him a lot coming out of college. Could he and Kyle Hamilton coexist in the same defense? They could. I think that would result in Hamilton still being, you know, playing 20, 30 yards off the line of scrimmage a fair amount. But my suspicion is through free agency or the draft, they're looking for a Marcus Williams replacement.
Yes.
But that's not that there aren't other positions where things stood out for me, and we talk about pass rush all the time, and we know that nobody appreciates pass rush more than Eric DaCosta. That's established fact.
Yes,
that's not like the Cowboys air quotes.
No,
alleged funk. Yeah, that's a fact.
1995. Yeah, drought. Allegedly.
You guys say we've got a drought.
Yeah.
Look, I think just doing a little bit of sniffing very early. Like, I think Khalil Mack's going to get paid. I think a guy like Josh Sweat might be more than they're willing to do, but like that next cluster of pass rushers from maybe a Dante Fowler Jr., a Hassan Reddick, a Chase Young, and Azeez Ojulari, do one of those guys intrigue them as adding an edge to this group?
Azeez Ojulari was a guy that interested me at the deadline and obviously got hurt, so they probably were lucky they didn't trade for him, but man, he started to flash before he did get hurt.
Zach Bond's another guy. Like, I mean, the Eagles extend a lot of guys. Yes. Like, they don't like to lose dudes after they discover them. I don't know that he's doing an extension now. I mean, I think at this point, right, he's like, hey, you want to keep me? You got to franchise me. So, and I don't know what you pay a guy who looked like a special teams journeyman and then became a defensive player of the year candidate, but he was a playmaker in Vic Fangio's defense.
Yes. Going back to Hassan Reddick, it was such a weird year for him where he got traded, then he didn't show up, then eventually he did show up.
It was a lost year.
A total lost year. What market do you expect him
to have? Why I'm listening to him, because I think he's got the kind of warts that put him into the bins that they're usually looking in.
They like those bins. Yeah. They like those bins.
31, not super old.
And his last season without was great. Like he's played on multiple teams and gotten after the quarterback on multiple teams.
Been a part of good defenses. Understands, you know, he's been in the playoffs. Like I think he's at a point in his career where that probably starts making more sense to them.
Any other position of note?
I mean, look, I don't know that they're going to do much at tackle, and Cam Robinson played well. I mean, he was a solid player in Jacksonville, and he was put into a tough situation in Minnesota when Darisaw was lost for the year, and he did the job and did it at a pretty good level. I don't think the Ravens would spend that money, but he's certainly going to be cheaper than Ronnie Stanley.
Yeah.
So I don't know what his market's going to be. That would be a little interesting to me. We're going to talk a lot about Roquan Smith on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, Bobby
Who
Wagner.
Who rides sidecar with Roquan Smith? Would Bobby Wagner or my guy Ernest Jones make some sense in that regard? I think possibly. And then even some corners like Byron Murphy Jr., Mike Hilton are guys who I think could maybe be what Arthur Millett was 2 years ago and then some.
Coming up next, we get to the Ravens and where they are, or where are they right now? How close are they to being a Super Bowl team? Just how far away are they from the Chiefs? We'll tell you next here on The Fan. Purple Rain brought to you by Dietz and Watson. And Ravens this year lose a close game in the divisional round to the Bills, a game that I think we all feel like they had opportunities to win if they don't beat themselves. And then a year ago, they lost the AFC Championship game at home to the Chiefs, a game that we felt they could have won if they didn't beat themselves. Sure. So we asked the question, you still got Lamar Jackson in his prime. He seems healthy. How close are they, or how far away are they from being a Super Bowl champion?
I almost feel like it does not apply to this because the Chiefs are so on another plane. Their postseason acumen, their postseason genius. I mean, they are geniuses at winning playoff football games. Like, I don't even know how to sort of compare other teams to them because the field has had 20 bites at that apple and they've connected three times. So is anybody close to them? Like, if they beat the Eagles, what are we talking about? Like, how do we even compare or measure? They're in their own stratosphere.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I agree with everything you're saying, but I guess I'm playing semantics here. The Bills were close. They just couldn't get over the hump. The Chiefs were close. They just can't get it. Like, the
what's
Chiefs,
close?
They had the ball
because
down
three. They weren't blown out?
Yeah, but that's even tough to say. When the Chiefs have won, what, 16, 17 straight one-score games? I mean,
that's
several teams have been close.
Yes. Well, they just win. Well, they don't beat themselves.
That's
everybody else beats themselves. Now, the Bills did not beat them. They should have turned the ball over about five times Sunday. They did not. The Chiefs still found a way to win.
There's a very real chance that whoever they play in the kickoff game next year, we're talking about that game that Thursday night in early September, and we're saying Patrick Mahomes has lost one football game since Christmas Day 2023.
That's unbelievable.
Like, there's a really solid chance that that's the discussion going into
the
season.
It's a 50-50 shot right now.
Who's close to that? I don't know who's close to that.
Oh.
Like, if Patrick Mahomes stays healthy and Andy Reid's on the sidelines, I don't think anything else matters. You could tell me Kelce plays or Kelce doesn't play. You could tell me, you know what I mean?
That doesn't matter. They traded Tyreek Hill and they've been to three straight Super Bowls.
You could tell me the defense started fast or the defense crapped the bed for 10 weeks, because we've seen that before, and then flips the switch late. You're like, you could tell me Harrison Butker's there, or you could tell me Harrison Butker's hurt, because we saw that this year. Like, I just, when they really need to get it done, when they're focused and all in, they don't beat themselves, and it's not even just other people just fall over and like hand it to them. They take it.
Yeah.
They're more cutthroat than you. They're more confident than you. They're more carefree than you. Their self-belief trumps your self-belief.
Hey, just look at what happened at the end of the game Sunday. They threw the ball twice. Like, teams are more willing to run the ball, run the clock, make you use your timeouts. No, they said, you know what? We're going to run high percentage passes, and we're going to beat you that way, and they did. At the end of the game, I'm talking the final possession. Samaj Perine caught the game, the play that ended the game.
We talked about this isn't the same offense all year, and then the game really, really matters, and they score 32 points. And who, you tell me, who were their offensive stars in that game?
Xavier Worthy.
And he had like 67 yards
and
receiving.
And Mahomes with his legs.
It's Mahomes. Yeah, like who? Kelce didn't have a great game. Noah Gray never had a ball thrown to him. Did D-Hop play in that game? I don't even know. Did he? I guess he did. Hollywood Brown drops balls because he's Hollywood Brown.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Hunt was kind of effective. They didn't even think he'd be on the team this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The left tackle is a Pro Bowl guard.
Yeah.
Like, who? You tell me, besides Patrick Mahomes, who was great? And they scored 32 points, and they could have scored. If he doesn't fumble, which he rarely does, they probably score 39.
That's the other scary aspect to it. They have this full offseason to fix the tackle position, which has been a nightmare for them, and they're still back in the Super Bowl.
They drafted one high a year ago, and he hasn't worked out, the BYU kid.
And maybe they'll be able to develop him. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll go get Cam Robinson. I don't know. Maybe they'll go get Ronnie Stanley. But, like, I mean, could they use another pass rusher? Yeah. I mean, Karloftis flashes. Like, could they use an edge guy? Like, if they win a Super Bowl, is Chris Jones retiring or is he running it back for one more year? He's probably running it back for one more year. Now, could they use another D-tackle to keep him on a pitch count more? I mean, sure. Is, like, Nick Bolton going to leave because they're not going to pay an off-ball linebacker? Ravens are paying $120 million. Yeah. They get $20 million out of them. So, like, but they're always drafting linebackers, right? Leo, Chanel, number five. Mm. And I'm sure they'll find a linebacker in this draft who they like. Like, I think the secondary is pretty much all coming back. Like,
yeah, safety, Justin Reed.
They're going to lose a guard. They're going to lose a guard. He's going to go somewhere else and make crazy money. But, like,
Mahomes will still be there and Reed will still be there. That's all that matters.
Oh, and
next year,
you're going to have Rice back, and you're going to have Worthy that much further developed.
Yes.
I mean, so are the Ravens close? I don't know. I don't think anybody's close.
I just look at I think they're close. It's just they can't get over the hump, and nobody can get over the hump. And maybe it's a mirage that they're close.
Could you imagine covering a football team that played 20 playoff games in 5 years and won 17 of them?
No, but that's what the Chiefs are doing.
Can you imagine that?
No.
And the postseason numbers that Mahomes has that you've been talking
better
about.
Better than anybody's regular season.
He's never lost in the divisional round. Never, ever, ever lost in the divisional round.
He's never lost in regulation in the championship game. AFC championship.
No, it's disgusting how good they are.
Like once or twice you play your A-plus game and maybe you break through. But as long as this guy's healthy.
Well, that's the other thing that really just makes it that much more frustrating about last year with the Ravens. They've made it to 7 straight AFC championships. They've all been at home besides last year.
Yeah, and the Ravens decided to outsmart them that day. And they were their own worst enemies, as they are when they lose. You know, the fumbles at the goal
line.
3
turnovers.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff.
You want to know what would have been a great year to maybe get them?
Last year?
Might have been 2019 if you could have beat the bum-ass Titans at home and even gotten to the point where, right?
Yeah. Yep. No, you're absolutely
right. What if you hosted that one?
They weren't the Chiefs yet.
They weren't this, that. We weren't talking about they played 20 playoff games and won 17 of them.
Nope.
But.
So they've had two missed opportunities.
What were they, 11, 12-point favorites against the Titans? I mean, it
double
was a
digit,
big number.
Yeah.
Double digits.
Remember,
and that thing was over at halftime, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. I you probably should have got them then, because getting them now?
They're going to lose at some point, aren't they? Like, the Patriots had the two dynasties. The Ravens, they go up there and beat
them. Patriots didn't do this.
I know, but I'm saying, like, it's not.
They didn't go 5 or 6 years.
Nothing lasts forever.
He's 29.
Nothing lasts forever, Jason. I'm old.
They had that little lull, the Patriots did.
Yeah.
Gives you a little hope.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, we'll come back, get the text of the day. We'll preview tomorrow's show, but most importantly, get you ready for Glenn and Rita Book Club. Starts at 6 here on the Fan. Man, oh man, we got Glenn and Rita coming up at 6. And
we're sure about that?
Yeah. And
we don't have dueling banjos tonight?
No, it's Glenn and Rita.
Okay.
So, and
just asking.
I just wanted to give Jason props because the book club tonight was originally his recommendation. Randomly, he knew I was watching documentaries, and he's like, you got to watch this Kings of Tupelo. And so I watched
it. It's out there.
And then I recommended a book club.
Bonkers.
And I think it's going to get a pretty high score.
There's a lot to unpack in one segment. A lot to unpack. You want to talk about personalities? Crazy people just out there. Mississippi seems like an interesting place.
Sometimes the universe really does conspire to bring certain people together.
Yes.
Like it's certain people finding certain people in this crazy mixed up world. It's hard to figure.
I would tell Bellwether.
But if ever there was a, like, I guess the Elvis impersonator is the protagonist. I mean, he was the protagonist for me.
Yeah.
But for him to have met his match in this, like, for these two to have found each other and been the foil for one another and for it to go to the levels that it went to, this seemingly innocuous, stupid personal hatred and rivalry, for it to have gone from social media trolling to like shutting down the White House. It's unbelievable.
It is incredible.
I don't remember any of
me
that
neither.
Happening.
I do. I said it before. I'll say it again. I vaguely remember the Ryson thing with the White House, like that they got this envelope and that whole. That's all I remember. But the rest of it, no. Let's get the text of the day.
Check 1-2. Check.
Text today is sponsored by Orsman Automotive, driven by OrsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Orsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OrsmanCars.com. Text of the day comes from Nick in Pasadena, who says, could the Carlson signing mean an outfielder will be on the move in a deal for an ace?
No.
No. I guess hypothetically, sure, but they like depth, Jason. They like deep depth.
If they had re-signed Tony Taters, I might be more inclined to think it means that. Now, I don't know if he's got opt-outs or whatever. I know, like, you know, Andy Koska said he's got
he's probably going to be options. The minors. He said, yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Like, usually when these guys agree to this kind of thing.
But he's 26. He's not older.
I know, but I don't know.
He just had arbitration.
Boy, he really had no market. Yeah. They got him for $1 million, and all they have to do is put him in Norfolk, and he can't opt. He doesn't. You know what I mean? A lot of times there's that opt-out date, like a going into the final week of spring training. If you think you can make more or do something more somewhere else. This will be our last time with Beltway Ben because he will be helping out the morning show this week. So, Beltway Ben, when you're back in the fold next Monday, you will still be riding high from a Maryland Terrapins win over Wisconsin? Yes, no, I don't want to put...
He was telling Ken prior to the show, man.
He's confident.
Super confident.
I'm more confident in this one than the last two, I'll be honest. I think Wisconsin's benefited from their schedule. It'll be a good, you know, on paper win for Maryland, but I think Maryland's a much better team. But this is a different Wisconsin team. Most of the Wisconsin teams have been, they can score 58, they're going to get the ball
plotting inside.
Clock.
Yeah,
this team can run, but I think the Terps are going to be way too much for them.
Now, will you go to your establishment to watch that, or with you having to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning? Does that put a crimp in your plans?
I got basketball Wednesday nights, but I'll have it on.
Thankfully, it's a 7 o'clock tip and not a 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay.
Beltway Ben, we'll miss you.
Godspeed
we'll see you Monday.
This week.
See you next week.
We'll miss you.
Yeah.
See you Monday.
What do we got on tomorrow's show?
Tomorrow's show, we have Tim Murray, get our best bets with him, Chris Nockey to preview the Wisconsin game, and John Mioli to talk some Orioles with
him. Get his thoughts on what they've done this offseason. And as we're weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Greetings from Davos, baby.
Yeah, Switzerland's nicest time of year. That is it for us, but coming up next. Yeah, Jason.
Think we could do a show from Davos?
Let's get a sponsor for that. Hey, Glenn and Rita coming up next, which means book club. Jason gets to leave, but me and Bone stay next here on The Fan.